What the Health with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. I'm an online health and fitness expert who has a BSc in sports rehabilitation, and I'm a former head of medical and performance in professional football. However, I've been in the health and fitness industry for over a decade, and I've been helping real people feel better and move smarter. If you're sick of dodgy health advice online, you're in the right place, because every week I help you cut through the chaos and confusion of internet nonsense and health hype, bringing clarity, evidence, and a whole lot of energy. I'll be joined by expert guests as we dissect trends, bust myths, and guide you towards real lasting results the healthy way. Joining me today, I'm going to be joined by TJ Power, a lead neuroscientist and founder of the Dose Lab, and Dr. Julia Basso. However, this week we are going to be starting and we are joined by Mihak Kansal, chef and owner of Bindus Eatery. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for asking. Right. Let's jump into the questions, shall we? So, first of all, you're a self-taught cook, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I am.
And you've always had a bit of a passion for cooking. Tell me more about this.
Yeah, so I actually started cooking from a really young age, probably from about 12 to 13 years old. And it was just sort of like a therapy as well as like just a good way to like enjoy good, nutritious food, frankly. And I never came from a family of like really good cooks. So I sort of took it upon myself to teach myself how to cook.
Okay, nice. So you wanted to kind of take that role in the family and be the one that cooks and helps and supports everyone at home.
Yes. And also sort of like by default, because I'm from a very big, loud, proud Indian family. And food, you know, culture, heritage sort of like runs in our blood, and everything sort of is shared and centered around food.
Mm-hmm.
And where we didn't grow up having some of the most tastiest dishes, I would spend summer holidays out in India. So I actually taught myself how to cook whilst I was there.
Oh, amazing. Do you have a special dish or a go-to signature dish you would have cooked for the family?
So I am actually like really known for my butter chicken. That's okay. One of the things that I'm really known for. But also I make a lot of different takes on like salads and grills and things. So like I really make a lot of tikkas. I make a lot of different chickpea salads, like watermelon chaats, that sort of stuff. So I am really known for making Indian fusion food, or, you know, flecks of different cuisine, like European food or Lebanese food, Chinese food with flecks of like Indian okay. in there, basically.
Nice. So you're trying to get all the flavors from multiple nations and, yeah. and cuisines. I like that. Okay. When did you decide you wanted to open Bindus Eatery? Is that correct, right? Bindus.
Yes, so it's okay. called Bindus Eatery. So it actually sort of just fell on my lap by chance. I had won a major food competition in 2018. And the prize basically was to have my own pop-up space for 2 weeks in Westfield's White City in the shopping center. I was trading there for about 2 weeks, and we sold out every single day of like our beetroot dikki, the butter chicken burger, the lamb burgers and pav bhaji and things, like, and my takes on Indian food. Mm. And we just thought, well, I thought that I really want to be doing this as my career, because I was in property beforehand. Lockdown hit, and I was like everybody else doing Eat Out to help out, teaching Zoom classes around the world.
Wow.
I was knee deep in butter chicken, selling kilos of it from my tiny little two-bedroom flat.
We
and
love
then
that.
Doing little takeaway deliveries. Yeah, it was literally like a baptism by fire. And then I was sort of walking the streets of London trying to find a site for myself. Eventually found a site, decided to take it on as a pop-up. And then it just sort of snowballed from there. Then I had my pop-up site, then I had my major site, and now I'm operating in Mercato Mayfair. So it just sort of catapulted from 4 to 5 years to where I am at the moment, to be honest.
But also hard work and perseverance, right? Just because you have a winning recipe yeah. doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily be successful. You've clearly put in the effort, you've put in the hours. Like you said, you were knee-deep in butter chicken once upon a time.
Yes.
Depending on how tall you are, that might have been up to your waist. We never know. But yeah, okay.
So, yeah, for sure. like, yeah. And the thing is that everyone has like a romantic view on having a restaurant, being a restaurateur or being a chef. And I think it's been glamorized so much on TV and when you watch these cooking shows, but it really isn't like that. You have to be the chef, you've got to be the delivery driver, you've got to be the plumber, you've got to be the bartender, you've got to be the person running the stock, you've got to be the accountant. You have to do it. And the thing is, it's like, it's one of those things that when you love doing it, it sort of runs deep within you.
Yeah. And I mean, I come from a background where my father owned a successful French restaurant. So I know all exactly what you're saying. He did everything, you know, he did absolutely everything. So you have to really be a jack of all trades and then you become a master of them all, I guess. So
you do.
So you mentioned obviously how you blend Indian classics with other cuisines. How did this come about? Did you just start playing around with recipes or was it more you liked a certain dish and you thought, oh, this could potentially work quite well together?
So I grew up in a very English-British environment. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Wiltshire. And I had access to like different fruits and vegetables, learned how to grow fruit and vegetables, but also at the same time at home, we had a very Indian palate, even despite the fact that my mum couldn't cook and nor could my dad. And spending time out in India, I had learned different cooking methods and techniques, but I couldn't mimic those same exact recipes over here with the produce that we had.
Yeah.
And you know, some of the spice inventory, some of the spices that you get over here. So what I decided to do was to basically start to fuse that together. So one of the first things I ever made was a gooseberry pickle, like a gooseberry jar, basically, mm-hmm. An apple raita and homegrown vegetables. I made vegetable biryani with it. And this kind of dish you would not normally ever find it. Like, you know, to say that I'm going to make a gooseberry jar would just be one of those things that you'd never even heard of.
Things like mango, lime,
pickle and things like that. Then I learned that with what I have and what I have access to and the produce I've got access to, I can create some amazing things. I have traveled quite a bit. And whilst I've been out traveling, I have picked up different cooking methods, techniques. And I understood that obviously through history and everything that has come during the world, basically, that there's always been a cross-pollination of culture, heritage, and cuisine throughout. Mm. And if you go to different parts of India, it's flecked with like Persian influences, as an example. Going down south, you have more of the coastal Sri Lankan and some Asian. Other parts of North India, you have more like of an Indo-Chinese influence. So that has really helped shape how I play with flavors, methods, and, you know, just basically dishes in general. And I always find that when you start to play with these types of recipes, you end up opening it up. And also being a British Indian here, my palate is very evolved. So I can't just have like beans on toast. I'd have to have it with like a bit of cumin, a bit of chili, some type of cheese, a bit of coriander. Then I'd want it on like a really good sourdough bread, or like I want to have it on some with like a salty English butter. So how do I fuse and marry that and marry my palate onto making it more accessible, which is how like the restaurant came about, the dishes came about, the food came about, because I always wanted to have something but take it to another dimension. And that really sort of allowed me to do that. And traveling through like Mexico and in Turkey, going to Lebanon and places like that, I've managed to take some of those bits of culture and heritage and actually fuse it together with an Indian palate. It seems to work.
Okay, well, I mean, that sounds like amazing. And it actually kind of leads me on to what I wanted to ask you next. So you've recently released a cookbook called Binder's Comfort Food with an Indian Soul. Tell us more about this. And does it include some of these recipes that you've been mentioning with the fusion?
It does. So the whole book is basically, I don't know how to describe it, other than it's just basically a piece of my heart and my travels into a book. So I have various chapters in there. So one thing that I don't want people to be is scared of Indian food. I think people have this notion that you need to have 10,000 different spices and you need to be slaving over a pot for like 10 hours.
Yeah.
And you're going to get turmeric colored nails at the end of it. It doesn't have to be those things. So I actually have, my book is actually divided up into chapters where I have freezer staples, how to make really quick garlic, ginger, chili purees, and a spice inventory, which is limited, that's going to be basically used throughout all of the recipes in the book.
Oh, okay.
So you'd have to go out and get like a whole different bunch of spices. The spices I've asked you to buy within this book are going to be used in different formats and different ways, different tempering methods throughout the recipes. I have a chapter which is basically on buns and pows, which is all takes on like burgers and like real street foods of India. Different sections on chutneys and raita. So my pomegranate raita, my beetroot raita, all healthy recipes are in there. All of my grilled recipes, like my fish tikka, my chicken tikka, my Afghani chicken tikka, it's all in there. One of my favorite recipes that's in the book is my hot hummus recipe. It is a recipe that I learned whilst while walking the streets of Istanbul. We went past this rug shop and I just got this smell of brown butter and pine nuts and clay. And I didn't know where it was coming from. And I just saw this little man at the back of the, at the back of this rug shop making this warm hummus that was coming out of this charcoal oven. And he gave it to me with the Turkish bread. It was absolutely delicious. And I thought, I know how to make this to another level by adding like a lamb spicy keema on the top, which is an Indian lamb mince, or to put like a spicy chickpea on the top of it. So that recipe is also in my book. And then you've also got the traditional recipes, like, you know, the go-to butter chicken that everybody loves is in there, and like lamb curries, vegetarian curries, vegan recipes, they're all in there, as well as some really fun takes on salad. So one of my favorite recipes in there is my cumin cretin salad. I love Greece and I love everything Greek, and I wanted to fuse those kind of flavors in with some of my dishes. So it's all in there, really.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure with everything that you've done and all the traveling, like it's a good book. So I will make sure I can, you know, have a look and try and get my hands on it.
I'll try and send you a copy. I hope you enjoy it.
That's very kind of you. Thank you. What is your advice for anyone wanting to start taking cooking a little bit more seriously, or potentially, you know, path a future like you've managed to path?
I love this question because I get asked this all the time, and my DMs are always flooded with, I really want to start a food business. I want to start a bakery. I would like to start a food truck. I would like to start cooking from home. And I don't have, honestly, I do not have a magic formula. The only way to do anything is to actually start.
Do. Yes.
And the only way that you're going to do anything is by starting. And if you display commitment, resilience, discipline, and understand that in this moment, this is the youngest you're ever going to be, and if you don't start now, you never will, that will take you forward into starting this business and anything that you want to do. Obviously, skill does come into it and you have to be passionate about what you do. But the best way to actually do anything is to start and learn to think quickly and laterally on your feet and evolve with market trends. That is the biggest advice I could give to anybody that wants to start this.
Yeah, and really, really good advice. And I'm a firm believer of people are always looking for the perfect conditions, but today is your perfect condition to just do.
Exactly.
Just take the jump. Exactly. Because, you know, that's the only way to get started. Right. We are out of time, but I just wanted to thank you. Where can everyone find you online? Do you have an Instagram page? Do you have a website? Obviously, you've got your book.
I do. So they can find me on my website, which is binnasitri.com, on Instagram, binnasitri, or Mehek Cooks. You can find me there, and the book can be found in WH Smith's, Waterstones, Amazon. Yeah, so I'm there, so come find me.
Amazing. Well, Mehek, thank you so much for your time, and you have a great rest of the day, and we will speak soon.
Yes, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be joined by TJ Power, lead neuroscientist and founder of the Dose Lab.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Danny Harmer, hello.
Thank you, what an introduction.
I heard in an interview, this may no longer be the case, but in 2020 you said you never actually read the original Tracy Beaker.
I've still never read it, and I'm gonna go down with this ship, and quite frankly, I shall never read it. I've got this far in life. And do you know what? I think it's kind of, in a weird way, I think it helped me get the part, because I had no idea of this character apart from the character that I made her.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
You might then see friends, family that require a little bit of support, financial advice. How do you go about sharing that advice, sharing that support without being condescending?
A practical tip that everyone can do that is low friction, send them financial content that you like. If you have a favorite content creator, if you see an article that you like, send them the video and just ask them, what do you think? And then that can begin a conversation around it.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When is too early to say I love you? Soph said it the night we met.
Yeah. I did. Right, okay, right, let's just clear this up, right? When I said I love you, I remember I said it in the car.
In the cab, yeah.
In the cab, and I was like, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah, well, that was the day I made you my girlfriend, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I said I love you, and you were like, I love you too, and I was like, I love you, 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 I love you so much, I love you so much, oh my God, I love you.
What the Health with Georges Bertineau, exclusively on FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Whilst we wait for TJ, we're going to start with some listener questions. So, these are some really good ones, by the way. So, Connor, what are the most important macros that I should be tracking? I only track calories at the moment. Right, so long and short of it, protein is the most important macronutrient that we can consume. Now, I was literally having this conversation yesterday. The thing behind protein is the reason why coaches and protein is so important is because it helps us repair, okay, and build muscle tissue. Now, the most important thing and the reason why it's so important is it also helps us burn calories. So there is a thermic effect of food. So when we ingest food, our body has to use calories to also break it down and use it. So the reason why it's so important is because it has so many more effects than anything else, really. So a high protein diet means actually there's going to be potentially a 10 to 15% calorie percentage that is going to be used to be burnt. So let's say I consume 200 grams of protein because I'm a 100 kilo individual. I'm not, I'm a little bit heavier, but anyway, you are going to use a large percentage of that food as calories and you're going to break it down. So it's a super important macronutrient and it's really, really good because, you know, if we're using calories to eat food, that is a really, really good sign, and that is a thermogenetic effect of food. Next question is Jenny, what is the difference in using a standalone weight, using standalone weights rather than any weight machine in the gym? Is one better than the other? So Jenny, amazing question. So this is basically open chain and closed chain exercises. So a closed chain exercise is you on a machine, and an open chain exercise is you using dumbbells, a bench press, free weights, squats. The difference between them is you require more stability with free weights. So there is you require more muscle activation, but there is no reason why, as a beginner, novice, advanced lifter, that using machines aren't equally as good. The main thing is, Jenny, we want you to feel confident, we want you to feel safe, and we want you to feel that you are comfortable in the gym, because for some people it can be super daunting, and for some people it can be super difficult to make themselves go in the gym. So my biggest piece of advice is, if you feel uncomfortable with open chain or free weight exercises, go to the weight machines, stick to the weight machines, use them, because they are safer, they are easier to use. You can't really go wrong with them because there's a picture, and they move in pretty much two directions, forwards and back, or up and down, or out and in. So hopefully that helps. And yeah, they are, yeah, that's a great question. Trevor, I have bought some resistance bands that have just been gathering dust in my house. I would use them as dust collectors, my friend. Are there any home workouts that I could use them for, or are they better for gym workouts? You can use them for both. You can use them for warm-up, activation. You can pretty much use them for most things, okay? So if you don't like Jenny, if you aren't comfortable or you aren't sure about going to the gym, no worries, that's fine. Use them for home workouts. But if you want to take them to the gym, then you can use them to keep you warm, or get you warm, sorry, in the gym, to keep you warm, to get you warm in the gym. So, for example, a banded pull apart, a front raise, a lateral raise. You can use them for to make your press ups harder, or you can make them more challenging. You know, you can use a resistance band for anything. I personally think they're great for rehab, and they're great for helping people come back from injuries, really, which is actually where the next question is going to go. So, Sarah, I'm recovering from a hamstring injury at the moment. What exercises would you recommend to ease back into training? Right. Sarah, this is a fantastic question from someone who's got a rehab background. So, there is a protocol called Askling's Protocol. It is a rehab protocol which is basically used for all sorts of athletes and in the medical sector. So, long and short of it, you want to look at pain. So, if you have no pain walking and you have no pain in the gym, that is a really good indicator that you are able to advance and move on. So, start with three sets of an isometric movement to start with. So that might be a hamstring bridge, very similar to a glute bridge, but whereas your feet aren't flat, your heels are driving into the ground and you are thrusting up on the floor, you'll feel more activation in your hamstring. Can you feel any pain? If you don't, then that is a very good exercise for you. You have RDLs, which is a Romanian deadlift. You have a single leg RDL, which is really good. You also have a reverse Nordic. No, you've obviously got a Nordic, which is a body weight exercise. But long and short of it is, there isn't really one exercise I would recommend. I would fully recommend doing every exercise, but I would start with exercises in short range, and then I would look at longer range, and then I would look at the position of the hip and the knee. Because obviously you can move the hamstring, it's two joint muscle, so obviously it doesn't just flex the knee, it helps with extension as well of the hip. So you can put it on extra stretch, which is going to help move that around and make it stronger at length. And Paul, can you be in too much of a calorie deficit when dieting? I'm consuming around 1,600 calories at the moment. Paul, yes, you can. This is actually a common theme and a common question that I get asked and I deal with on a weekly and daily basis with my current clients. Long and short of it is, yes, you can undereat. And when you undereat, your body is just going to store fat. It's not going to build muscle. It's not going to lose fat. It's going to store because it's going to be in starvation mode. So you have to ask yourself, what am I eating? Am I eating enough protein? We go back to the first question about from Connor. And can I do more or can I do less? Can I focus my carbohydrates around training to help the depletion of glycogen from the muscles? Again, a very sciencey and a very long answer, but the long and short of it is you can be in too much of a deficit. It's like with the weight loss injections, you know, people rebound back afterwards because they've been so depleted. So look at your macros. If you need any help, send me a message on Instagram at gb.fitness.health and I can help figure some stuff out for you. Right, guys, we're going to go on to a break. So coming up after the break, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Julia Basso, who is assistant professor in the Department of Human Nutrition, Foods and Exercise at Virginia Tech.
FUBAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
We store so much of our trauma and our energy in our body. I am just incredibly, incredibly tired of keeping this trauma locked inside my body. And so all I needed to do is release it. You know, it's like going on a bender and drinking too much booze and you throw it up because you just need to get that out of your system because it's gonna catch up with you at some point if you don't.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back, and we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
If you drink a little, then drive, you risk losing your license. You risk every day becoming more complicated.
How am I supposed to get to training, Dad? How am I supposed to...
You risk losing your job.
I'm going to have to let you go.
You risk your family not looking at you the same way.
I can't believe you did that.
You risk injuring someone.
Hello, I need an ambulance.
You risk being seen as a drink driver. Drink a little, risk a lot. Think.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, yeah, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness and I need him to be kind.
Politics Uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Joining me now is Dr. Julia Basso, who is the Assistant Professor in the Department of Human Nutrition, Foods and Exercise at the Virginia Tech and Director of the Embodied Brain Laboratory. Dr. Basso, how are you today? Are you well?
Good, very well. Yes, thank you for having me.
Good. No, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, as always, having someone of your high caliber joining us. So let's jump straight into the questions, okay? What drew you in as a neuroscientist? You know, you explore intersections of the brain, science, and club culture in the We Become One, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. So, you know, I really started out as a dancer primarily. I've been dancing ever since I was a little girl, probably around 3 years of age. And so I was dancing throughout, you know, the entirety of my lifespan. And in college, I had the opportunity to start developing my scientific background, and I double majored in dance and neuroscience at that time. So it was at that point that I really started merging these two fields and these two ideas. And I ended up doing my PhD in behavioral and neural science at Rutgers University in New Jersey. And it was then that I started studying the motivation for physical activity and really understanding all the benefits that a physical activity practice can have on the brain. And when I started my own lab in 2021, the Embodied Brain Lab, I really wanted to explore the benefits of dance in particular as what I see as kind of this enriched form of physical activity. And with dance, of course, we have music. You're often dancing to music, of course. And so in this documentary, We Become One, we started to look at the impact of the dance floor, what happens on the dance floor in this club music setting.
Okay. Really, really interesting, because obviously when this, you know, interview came up across my, you know, in front of me, I was super intrigued, because back when I was younger, I used to go out clubbing, and, you know, I was always like, oh, it's not a positive thing. But, you know, you're here saying that there is positives to it. Correct.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, of course, there's that stigma about going out, being on the dance floor in the clubs. And it's just often associated, right, with consuming alcohol, maybe drug culture and things like that. But when we take that out of the picture and when we think about what's happening to the body and brain by engaging in music, by engaging in dance, and being really in that social culture with other people. So one of the things that dance is really excellent for is enhancing social connection. Okay. And by being on that dance floor, and you know, when you're in the club and the DJ is playing, the music is going, and people start dancing, they start jumping, fist pumping, and the rhythms of the body start to become entrained to the music. And what's happening at the level of the brain, these things called neural oscillations start to emerge. Yes. And those neural oscillations start to become rhythmic with the body, rhythmic with the music that's happening, and rhythmic to the people around you. And so there's this really cool thing called interbrain synchrony. And when rhythms of the brain between people start to organically and naturally synchronize, it's been shown to enhance social connection. So it's really this pattern from musical entrainment to movement and rhythm of the body to training these neural rhythms in a synchronous group behavior, that is dance in the club, that we get to have these shared experiences that create social bonding.
Okay, so I once heard that BPM is obviously, you know, beats per minute, correct?
Yeah.
From the music, but that also synchronizes with our brains and our hearts, correct? And we can then synchronize with someone else who's potentially dancing on a similar wavelength or energy level to ourselves.
That's right. So the body physiology can also start to synchronize. Of course, our cardiopulmonary function, you start to jump to the rhythms of the music, and everybody gets in synchronized at the level not only of body and of heart, but of brain as well. And so, yeah, I mean, there's this really cool kind of science on the idea that when we think about music, when we think about musical rhythms and the oscillations essentially in the music, whether it's alpha and theta, these certain rhythmic oscillations that happen in the music. Let's take alpha, for example. It's an oscillation that's between 8 to 12 hertz. And when you have a musical rhythm like that, you can start to entrain the brain in actually the same kind of rhythmic frequencies. And when we think about alpha in the brain, what we end up seeing at the behavioral level is you can actually bring someone into these really meditative states. So I've been talking a lot about the DJ almost as the psychologist of the dance floor, because that person cultivating those musical rhythms can actually get people into certain neural states or patterns that are then associated with feeling a certain way. And, you know, you often see that in, say, a yoga class, for example, whereby the yoga teacher is kind of helping to calm the mood through the music.
Okay. I mean, super fascinating stuff. And like, we're seeing a real shift, like among young people, you know, with alternatives like a Saturday run club instead of potentially going out. Why do you think people are stepping away from nightlife? And what, you know, might there be, you know, is there something missing neurologically?
Well, no, I mean, I think it's absolutely fascinating. I think there's this awesome kind of, I don't know if it's kind of a scene that's happening right now where alcohol is being taken away from the picture. You know, before it was kind of all about going out, using alcohol, using drugs and things. But now, you know, we're leaning towards a healthier culture. And so these Saturday day clubs, for example, you can go out, you can get the benefits of the music and the dance without alcohol, without drugs, and also without sleep deprivation. So when we think about,
yes,
you're out clubbing at 2 or 4 in the morning, as say, right, we used to do out in New York City at the clubs, then you're losing sleep, right? And so sleep is a really important time for memory consolidation, for mood improvement, all of these things. So by pairing clubbing with ample sleep, then that would be the most beneficial thing.
Okay. And I mean, I obviously understand the shift because I look back when I was younger, it was about going out partying. And it's fascinating what you say, because so many people would have met their partners. And I feel that the way the world's kind of going, you know, everyone's trying to be a lot healthier.
Yes.
Right. So we can still get the health benefits of music, dancing, that connection neurologically and physiologically, but also without the sleep deprivation.
100%. Yep.
Okay, amazing. Right. So from a neuroscience perspective, what does the film reveal about how clubbing affects the brain and the emotional well-being? So obviously you've mentioned those things, but does the film reveal it in a completely different way? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that I love that the film highlights is this idea that dance and movement practices can bring about in the brain so many different neurotransmitters. So let's think about, for example, if somebody's depressed and they might take a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor or SSRI, an antidepressant, right? That primarily works on serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter in the brain that promotes feel-good states, happiness, states of calm, and kind of being connected with others, right? So that's all good and wonderful. But when we think about movement, it acts upon so many different neurotransmitters, not only serotonin, but dopamine, norepinephrine. There's going to be increases in oxytocin, that's kind of our social bonding hormone, and things like the endogenous opioids and endocannabinoids. And those are things that, you know, when we think about heroin or opiates and then THC, marijuana, these are the receptor sites that those drugs bind to. So it's creating this amalgamation of different neurochemicals. Let's say if you just take SSRI, for example, it's only hitting on one of these things. So that's why I love to talk about physical activity and movement practices as this really enhanced form, a non-pharmacological thing that we can do that's really, really powerful and potent for the brain.
Okay. Question. I have felt high before from music and being in a club. I don't touch drugs, not interest of mine. And I'm pretty sure I was sober at the time because I think I was driving when I was younger. Is that like a common feeling, like that euphoric kind of like you're buzzing off a song or maybe the energy that's flying around the room? Because I'm a firm believer of energies and so on. So
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly some of the neurotransmitters that we were talking about, endocannabinoids, endogenous opioids. And when you look at the literature, it's really showing that the endogenous opioids and endocannabinoids are really promoting those pleasurable states of feeling and being. And so you can get a high, but it's a natural high in that sense. So it's a pretty fantastic way to get those feel good emotions and sensations without drugs.
Okay. With the film in itself, do you feel that it challenges the narrative that clubbing is often framed as escapism?
Sure. I mean, I think that's an interesting question. Yeah, I think it challenges that notion because, you know, we talk about social connection and social bonding. And I think from that evolutionary perspective that some of the scientists were talking about, it's one of the first ways that we came together as a community early in our evolutionary periods of being and being in community with others, communicating with others. So it's this shared language in the absence of formal verbal language that we can communicate with one another, that we can share our shared emotional landscapes and experiences through movement and dance and music. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it's not necessarily escapism, but it's coming together and bonding with others and being in community.
Which I feel that maybe the I'm assuming I'm classified as a millennial. I never really know because I was 93, but I'm assuming, like, I feel that a lot of people are quite lonely these days, and I feel like the clubbing scene has moved on. And yes, it's down to day drinking, but then it's also, there's lots of like materialistic stuff with the whole day drinking scene or the day party scene. And it's like, oh, do I want to go out late? And like we said earlier, be tired, or do I want to kind of enjoy the energy during the day? So, okay, I get that. What message do you hope resonates most with the younger audience about the neuroscience of shared music experience and human connection?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really important today because I have two children and I know that draw of social media and being on the tablet, being on the phone. And so we have this tendency to go into this little world that's on our screens and not connect with others or kind of connect with each other, but in this non-social way of being, right? Through apps, through Facebook, through Instagram, through Twitter and so forth. And so being out in the club, being in community with others is a great
being
way.
Present.
Being present. Yeah, physically present. And so our research is showing that through these dance practices, it actually enhances mindfulness. So the capacity to be fully with one's own body and mind and be present in the current moment, you know, rather than connecting through apps and social media. So it's really a way to enhance these neural states of mindfulness and social connection.
Amazing. Well, Dr. Julia Basso, thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely amazing and very, very interesting. Where can we find you?
Yes. So find me either on my website at www.embodiedbrainlab.com or on social media at Embodied Brain Lab.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day and I will speak to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.
Guys, an absolutely fantastic interview with Dr. Julia Basso. She also has a YouTube video that we're going to be posting on the in the info section of today's show. Right, so guys, we're going to be moving on to rating fitness trends on a scale of 1 to 10. I might give some a naught. Who knows? Right, so we're going to start with fitness raves. Wow. Okay, I'm going to give this a 3. I mean, I've never heard of a fitness rave in my life, but I'm assuming, going off what Dr. Julia Basso said, she feels that they're very beneficial because of, you know, the connection that we get. But obviously, that's more of a rave or more of the party scene. So for me, I'm going to give fitness raves 3 out of 10. Rebounding, which is mini trampoline workouts. I'll be honest with you, that can have a 1. I don't really see the benefit of it. If you are an individual who wants to do that and you don't exercise, then in my eyes, go for it. Go nuts, because doing something is better than nothing. But in the grand scheme of things, compared to everything else, that can have a 1. Weighted vests for walking. Well, walking in my eyes is a 10. So with a weighted vest, 11? No. So this can be a 10 out of 10 for me. You don't see it very often. You see weighted vests in the CrossFit industry and obviously in the calisthenics world. But for me, weighted vests for walking can be a 10. Bungee fitness. I'm assuming this is going to be similar to trampoline workouts, another little fad. Again, that can have a one, but if you're an individual that can't walk but can use bungee, that can do bungee fitness, then go for it. But I think you wouldn't be able to do bungee fitness if you couldn't walk. So if anything, stick to walking. It's phenomenal and super anabolic. Bungee fitness can be a 1 out of 10. Electrolytes, wow, that is a 10 if you're an athlete. I would probably say 8 for everyday people. Super, super important, obviously, for our hydration levels and keeping us topped up for the day in hydration terms, because obviously we are made up of so much water and so many salts. But yeah, electrolytes for me, 8 out of 10. Wall Pilates, which is, I'm assuming, a form of Pilates which involves a wall. I'm going to go with 6. Because I actually think Pilates is amazing. I mean, you can normally see when someone has that kind of Pilates physique. So for any of the listeners, if you have a Pilates physique, you'll probably look at yourself and you go, oh, okay, I see what he means. So yeah, but this is just Pilates with a wall. So maybe with an element of resistance. So yeah, that can have a 6 out of 10. Right. This is going to get interesting because we got a lot of fitness style options coming up. We've got Hyrox, Run Clubs, CrossFit, and Bodybuilding, which are probably 4 of the most popular styles. So, Hyrox competitions. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10, purely because it is accessible to all. Even if you aren't the strongest runner, it is so much more accessible than CrossFit. Which obviously means I'm going to put CrossFit lower down. So, Hyrox competitions, phenomenal. 9 out of 10. Very community-based. Growing at an ever-rapid rate. So, would highly recommend someone who wants to do a little bit more running to get involved. Which leads me on to Run Clubs. I think Run Clubs are 10 out of 10. Because it's a community. It's a great opportunity to meet people. It's an opportunity to be safe when running. It's also an opportunity to have people around you and connect and meet other like-minded fitness people. You don't have to be the best runner to join a run club, because the more we do, what happens? The better we get. Right, CrossFit. Wow. A sport that I took part in many moons ago, loved it, broke my wrist, don't love it anymore. I think Hyrox is the way forward. I think CrossFit isn't dying, but I do think it's on a bit of stagnation. I'm going to give a 7, purely because of the community element. Again, super, super important. Just getting people to go and exercise with a group is so much more interesting than potentially training on your own. So for me, CrossFit, 7 out of 10. I just think it needs to be coached better. I think the risk of injury is a lot higher than Run Clubs and Hyrox. So would highly suggest, if you're going to a box, which is what they call people that go to a CrossFit gym, it's called a CrossFit box, I would highly suggest making sure the coaches are good. Bodybuilding, wow, love it. Absolutely love it. From a personal standpoint, I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10. But from everybody else, I'd probably give it a 5. I'd say everyone else, it's probably a 5. I'm being told off here. I'm being told it's maybe a 2. I think from a personal point of view, I think bodybuilding is amazing. Not high-end Mr. Olympia bodybuilding. None of that. I think more lower scale kind of fitness athlete. Because we want to look good, we want to feel good, but also it's the work that you have to put in to obtain this physique is partly a mental challenge. I've never competed, I probably never will, but yeah, it's definitely one of those things that I'm going to have to give a 5, although I love it. So I love that kind of element of it, but I would never compete. Right, going on to things that we ingest. Creatine,
10 out of 10 for, because it's the most researched supplement on the market. It has not just physical benefits, but neurological benefits. Men and women should take it. 5 grams a day, minimum. I say minimum, maximum for most people. If you're a larger individual like myself and you train lots, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 grams if you really want. But yeah, creatine is the most elite supplement on the market that isn't an anabolic steroid. High protein diet. Silly. We've already answered it. 10. So you're probably catching the trend here. There's lots of 10s because there are lots of things that work and there are lots of things that don't work. So high protein diet, super important. As I mentioned earlier, if you've just joined us recently, it's the most important macronutrient out there. Singularly because it helps us build muscle tissue, but also we burn calories having to break it down because there is a thermic effect of the food we are ingesting. So high protein diet is a big win. If you eat lots of protein, you burn more calories. How amazing is that, right? You don't get that with keto, which leads me on to keto. I'm going to give keto a solid 2 out of 10 because, and this is my opinion. So if you want to challenge me, come on in. Come to the studio. Let's talk keto. But honestly, I don't think keto is sustainable long term. I do not feel that many people out there can stick to low carb, no carb for more than a few years. I have friends that turned vegan for 3-4 years. They gave up because they were like, actually, don't want to do it anymore. Some people want to stick to it. That's fine. You do you, boo. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to stand here and be like keto is the way forward. So for me, keto is a 2 out of 10. Foam rollers. I'm going to be honest. I think they're a load of dross. Absolute rubbish. 1. Because massage, sports massage, is scientifically proven to be beneficial. Now you're probably thinking, oh, but doesn't a foam roller do the same thing? Technically, no. I mean, they're good. They're all right. But I would definitely opt for a massage over anything else. Or, as I said, for many weeks on end, a hug with a loved one for 30 minutes because of the recovery effects that it has. I'm going to get a paper on this 1 week. And I'm telling you now, I'm going to read it to you guys. And you're all going to go, wow, I've got to hug people that I love more often because it helps me recover. It's honestly, it's equally as good as a sports massage for recovery because of the relaxation that it puts your body through. Carnival. God, this is going to be awkward, isn't it? Right, carnivore. I love meat. I couldn't do carnivore. I think it's a 1 because I think in years to come, there are going to be problems with it. In years to come. And you know what? I'll eat to my own hand if there aren't problems to come in 20, 30 years. Because the problems don't start now. They start when you've been doing something for so long. Like when we don't exercise. Like when we don't look after our bodies. Like with alcoholism. Like with drug abuse. Like with anything. The problem doesn't start now. It happens in 20, 30, 40 years when we are older. When we are weaker. When we haven't been doing these things. Walking. Well, we've kind of said walking with a vest, so this can be a 10, obviously. Fitness trackers or watches? 5. You know what? Yeah, a 5. Purely because of the accuracy. Now, again, I'm going to come in here 1 week and I'm going to come back with evidence and proof because I'm pretty sure a study's been done recently where watches have like, I think even the best watch has like a 20% validity rate and accuracy rate. So if I'm honest with you, yeah, maybe. Okay, you know what? That's harsh. 5 is harsh. 6. But I wouldn't be giving it a 7 or an 8. It's great. If it makes you go to the gym, go. Do your thing. Have fun. Enjoy. And last one, massage guns. 3. Right, guys, that is it from me today. I just want to thank our guests for today, for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Just a reminder, you can download the app and listen each week and follow us on social media. We are at What The Health Show on Instagram. If you want some help with your health and fitness goals, I provide a top-tier coaching service with no BS problem solving, and I'll hold your hand every step of the way. If you're interested, please reach out at gb.fitness.health. Also, you are able to listen back on all good podcasting platforms. Just another thank you from me. I'll see you at 11 a.m. next week for another jam-packed show. I'm Georges. Love you. Bye.
What the Health with Georges Bertineau, exclusively on FUBAR Radio. Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more.
Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real.
This is not real.
This is not real. I'm not playing into this.
Yeah.
You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections.